Good evening, folks. Welcome back to the Trinity Tims podcast. We've been on the go for a couple of months and we've just got it to over 1,000 subscribers, free subscribers, and that helps. So if you like what we're doing, please subscribe and share, pass it on, share messages and add comments. So we're live most weeks, so live comments. Eric's always good for keeping tabs on the comments. So my name's Joe McHugh from Video Celts, joined as ever by Eric Knott from Reed Celtic, and James Forrest, the other James Forrest, not a returning 15-season superstar, James Forrest from the Celtic blog. So things moved on quite nicely over the weekend. Celtic looked a bit more like Celtic, certainly for 25 minutes, 30 minutes. Oh, there's a takeover, fakeover mention already. So at the weekend, Celtic looked a bit more like themselves. There was a fantastic 25 minutes. Some great goals, some great play. And then it went a little bit flat, but we had Tony Ralston to come on at the end. So it's difficult as we're watching with Liverpool, getting towards the finishing line when you're well clear, there's no real pressure on you, and it's just a matter of time. So I don't know if there's four goals or five goals spread out over the 90 minutes, it might have looked a lot better on Saturday. But everyone that was at the match got a real good half hour. And it was, for those that remained, they got a rare treat, a Tony Ralston goal. So, Eric, what was your take on Saturday? Was Celtic back to their all-conquering best, or was it turning the corner and picking things up a bit?
Well, I mean, obviously, from the first 30 minutes or so, you would definitely think that whatever Brendan had to say to them in Perth and then throughout the week in training obviously had an impact, because for the first time, I would say, we saw Celtic come out of the traps really fast. And we saw, obviously, some spectacular goals in that first 30 minutes. As I said in my article yesterday, the real Rio Hatate seemed to be back, rather than this guy who's been impersonating him all season. This imposter that's been impersonating him all season. Obviously, his opening goal was spectacular, well-taken goal. And his second goal was a nice bit of trickery in front of the goal, the way he dinked the ball from one foot onto the other and then just placed it nicely into the bottom left. But then Cameron Carter-Vickers decided to impersonate Rio Hatate with his shot, which was even more spectacular into the left-hand side of the net, you know. They were really fast out of the traps. It was a goal rush in the first 30 minutes, but you always get the feeling when there's a goal rush in the first 30 minutes or so that it's always going to quieten down in the second half. I don't know, could you say whether Armstrong's goal kind of slowed the pace down a bit? Don't think he meant that. That was obviously a cross, I'd say, that he was trying to go for, but it worked out well for him. And that ended up being another kind of spectacular goal in the game at the other end. But I suppose if you're to look at the pattern throughout the season, when we've started games quickly and we've got a lot of goals in the first half, it always seems to taper off in the second half. So it was what I expected to happen. It just kind of fell off a cliff in the second half. Yet we still had 88% possession throughout the whole of the game. And 12% is all Kilmarnock had, which really just goes to show that Kilmarnock were just not at the races at all on the day. Even in the second half, they didn't make any attempt. But that was sort of like the Hearts game a couple of weeks back, when Hearts found themselves 3-down at halftime and they just put zero effort into the second half. But conversely, we didn't really put a whole pile of effort into the second half in that game either. This time, at least, we had a goal to talk about from, as you said, a rare goal from Tony Ralston, which was great. But look, overall, I would say that the reaction was a good reaction after what had happened the previous week in Perth. And what it does after what happened yesterday at Pittodrie, which... last kick of the game, poxy Ibrox managed to get an equaliser and, you know, delay the inevitable, because that's all they've done, is they've delayed the inevitable. And to watch the celebrations on the touchline, it was like you'd swear these guys had won the title. You'd swear it was them that was winning the title. It smacked of Fair Hill back in 2017 with Pedro Caixinha, if you remember that, where they went ballistic over an equaliser. I think it was an equalising goal in that game as well.
That was a winner,
but meant absolutely nothing in the overall scheme of things. So it was it very much sort of smacked of that kind of thing. But I'm sure Barry and his team were absolutely delighted that they delayed the inevitable for another 2 weeks. But, you know, Celtic are going to steamroller on. They're not going to stop them. They're not going to stop us winning this title. Whether it will be wrapped up in 2 weeks' time. Obviously, we've got the Cup semi-final in the weekend, coming in the weekend ahead. So whether it will be wrapped up in the following week remains to be seen. But yeah, I'd have to say I'm happy with the performance on Saturday. There's not a whole pile that I can say negative about it, other than I just wish at times that we turn the screw in the second half. And, you know, why, if we can score four in the first half, why sometimes couldn't we score four in the second? You know, just juggler. But then there is that element of, look, we have this wrapped up. We're miles ahead in this game. What's the point in killing ourselves? So I imagine it would be a very much different story if there was goal difference and we were very close to the Ibrox side, and or they were very close to us, and goal difference mattered a lot and so on and so forth. But that's not the case at the moment, and I guess that's the way it's going to be from here on out, other than when we go to Ibrox, obviously, on the 4th of May, as we established. So, yeah, that's my feelings on it. It was a good win, solid win, good reaction from Perth, and more of the same next time out. That's what we want.
James, we had four changes to the team on Saturday. Greg Taylor got an awful lot of publicity. It's going to be an interesting one. It's going to to and fro between now and the end of the season. I think the Jeffrey Schlupp bandwagon has ground a bit to a halt. It's an interesting one. At the same time, we've got Kieran Tierney, our incoming left back, could well be featuring in a Champions League quarter final, second leg. He could well be featuring a Champions League semi final and final before he arrives at Celtic. So the left back position has been up and down all season. What was your take on Greg Taylor's performance, his prospects, where we stand in his contract? And another one, Adam Ida just seems to be a magnet for a lot of criticism. I don't get it. The transfer fee was, it's an old cliche that the players don't decide the transfer fee. Adam Ida certainly did not have anything to do with that. That transfer fee was all down to Michael Nicholson and his renowned style of negotiating. I thought Adam Ida made a big impact in the team. He's a focal point. He occupied the Kilmarnock defence. It was similar. It was interesting. There was nine of the outfield players that won the league at Rugby Park last season. The only outfield change was Amy Engels in for Matt O'Reilly. So what was your take on the great Greg Taylor dilemma and the impact or otherwise of Adam Ida on the side on Saturday?
Well, Greg Taylor's not really a dilemma. Greg Taylor's going to go at the end of the season because we can't make him a rock-solid guarantee that he will play every week, and nor should we. We, as a club, should be thinking way past Greg Taylor at left-back and thinking about, you know, we should have been thinking about a proper replacement for him ages ago. If Tierney's going to be fit, Tierney's more than an adequate replacement for him. We're replacing a guy who is no harm to him, but an SPL standard player, with a guy who, as you say, is on the brink of a Champions League semi-final. That's a no-brainer. That's a no-brainer, that decision. And Greg Taylor knows it, and Greg Taylor will leave because of it. If Tierney is fit, he will play every week, regardless of how good Taylor can be at this level. He will play every week. And so Taylor doesn't want to be sitting on the bench at this point in his career, and fair play to him. The guy's been an outstanding servant to Celtic. He will go with everybody's best wishes, provided he doesn't go across the city, in which case he's made a rod for his own back. I won't be able to understand why anybody would want to take a decision like that, but he'll have other options. He'll have better options than Basket Case FC, so I very much doubt that that's where he's going to go. As for Adam Ida, Adam Ida is never going to catch a break. He's never going to catch a break. The Celtic fans who are only talking about how good a player Maeda is and how Maeda should play through the middle all think we're going to sign a striker in the transfer window who relegate Adam Ida to third choice. And that's an almost universal assumption. I personally think that we'll sign a backup striker. Somebody who won't cost an awful lot of money, and who will be more or less a development player and he'll get game time every once in a while. But Ida will be the number two choice. Maeda will be the number one choice. I am sick and tired of people hitting this guy over the head with a £9 million fee. Because you're right, Joe, he didn't decide the transfer fee. Michael Nicholson decided the transfer fee. Michael Nicholson's the one that screwed up what should have been one of the most straightforward negotiations we've done in years. Had we paid the £6 million at the start of the transfer window, there are some people who would have said that would have been too much. Fair enough, right? But there wouldn't be this almost universal, we have spent so much money on this guy and he's not worth it. I personally think that Ida's shown in flashes and in glimpses and in the games where it's mattered that he is worth it, that he is a big game player and that he can score big goals on big occasions. His performance against Villa was exceptional. That night he looked like a player who could have played in just about any team in the English Premier League. And how quickly we forget. Because last season, on loan, the guy came in and scored at Ibrox, scored in the cup final. Massive goals and massive games. And I don't get it. I don't get it. Well, this isn't a dud. This isn't a guy who's done nothing and isn't going to do nothing. This is a guy who's come in at a very difficult time. He's been understudy to Kyogo. Now he's understudy to Maeda. He plays once every 4 or 5 games as the main striker, as the starting striker. I don't know what people expect from him. I don't know what people want from him. The manager likes him. The manager rates him. The manager knows what he can do. And Brendan's judgment I will take over people who, to be fair to them, I don't know which game they're watching most weeks, but it isn't the one that I watch. A lot of football fans who don't seem to know very much about football.
We've seen loads of dud strikers at Celtic, and Adam Ida is not one of them. He is not a Bangura. There's been so many all these. He's not a Timu Pukki. He's a good cut above that. And when he's been called upon, he's delivered important goals. You listed a few. There was two penalties at Easter Road the start of February last year. 2 goals at Fir Park. Without those goals, our landscape would be very, very different.
Right,
we're not living in the past. He doesn't get a free pass for all time in the back of them, but when he's come in this season, he's done well. Never, ever forget popping a penalty away in the League Cup final. To go up and do that, Engels did the same. They all did it. That takes a lot of guts and nerve. So yep. These are guys we should be grateful for. They've got the trust of the manager and folk have forever thrown these transfer fees. But I don't think us three are going to convince too many people. There's a little bit of support. Ida will be a better player next year. Hopefully can still be a big player this season. He's done a fair chunk. There's not many Celtic. I don't know if anyone's ever scored 2 goals away in a Champions League group match. I suspect not. That's an accolade he's got, man. We'll pat this one and we'll turn to something that was evolving and developing this time last week. So we were still watching and waiting every week. There's no sign of Alan Muir on the SFA list of match officials. And in typical SFA fashion, they haven't said a word about Alan Muir, but the next best thing, a report from Stephen McGowan, and when something comes out of the SFA or the SPFL and it's got Stephen McGowan's name on it, you can take it to the bank. He's transferred from the Daily Mail to the Herald, but Alan Muir, I was going to say Alan Muir is no more. Alan Muir's been given a sideways move. If you're not good enough to be a VAR official, if you can't be trusted to inform the match referee of evidence that you've seen, don't worry. Willie Colm will give you a nice sideways move. You can become a referee observer. Much like Dougie, I'm trying to remember his second name. Was it Dougie McDonald? Pretty certain it was Dougie McDonald. He was forced a final match at Easter Road, and I believe he's still working in the training department of the SFA. So it almost seems as if it's impossible to work your way out of the SFA. So, Eric, what's your take on the demise of Alan Muir, the strange tactics of the SFA of not saying anything about it, and what happens with VAR and guys like Muir? I mean, Willie Collins getting praised left, right. Oh, it's fantastic. Great transfer. The refereeing decisions, the VAR, the use of VAR this season has been horrendous. Teams like Kilmarnock, Motherwell, St Mirren have been in the end of some horrendous decisions. But because Willie Collins doing his VAR review, he's got a few media pals, folks seem to be thinking, what a great guy, what a good job he's doing. The bottom line is the officials are getting it wrong on a weekly basis. So what's your take on Alan Muir and VAR at this minute?
Well, I mean, I did a fairly extensive article on Alan Muir, well, our club and Alan Muir the other day, in which I spoke about the fact that it's been, I think, like the last really majorly controversial refereeing decision that we had was the Dougie Dougie decision, where we'll say an SFA official, a referee, suffered somewhat as a result of it. But as you pointed out there, he's still involved in some form or other. And I stated that at that time, Celtic weren't vocal enough. I gave four examples over the last almost 40 years of times where Celtic have actually, you know, got the result that they required over injustices in terms of refereeing. I know there was two, like obviously the Jim Ferry incident, that wasn't refereeing, it was something different. But and then the Hugh Dallas incident, that was highlighted by an Irish journalist who basically revealed what he had done, and his position became untenable. And then you have the Dougie Dougie situation, and then you have Alan Muir. Well, that's four instances in nearly 40 years where we've actually got a result, which proves that as a club we don't push hard enough. And I certainly don't think that, you know, Silent Mike picked up the phone to the SFA and asked them to deal with the situation regarding Alan Muir, asked them to explain it properly, asked them to make an example of him. I don't think he did anything, you know. But at the same time, Muir's position, Alan Muir finds himself where he is right now because of Alan Muir and nobody else, and because of the decision he made on that day. As soon as he made that decision, he signed his transfer to referee observer. That's what he did. Now, a lot of people have been calling us out over the last few days saying that we've been saying he was sacked. Essentially, he has been sacked from his VAR role, but he's been moved across to a role where he's just a referee observer. I mean, it's a demotion. It's whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter. He's out of the picture when it comes to VAR. But what it doesn't do is solve the problem that we have with VAR, because we still have substandard referees sitting in front of the VAR monitor. And obviously Andrew Dallas is heavily involved. And we could get into the conversation about Andrew Dallas and what goes before Andrew Dallas, and we could go down that rabbit hole and we could be at it all night long. But the fact of the matter is that VAR it's a shambles. Can we look at the squiggly lines again the other day? You know, it almost looked like a boomerang. Because it was so badly drawn, just to try and ensure that Celtic had an offside. We all thought a couple of years back that VAR would improve the game. It would show transparency. It would show all these things that referees were missing, all these honest mistakes that they were making. But it's crystal clear that it's worse now. The delays that it takes to make decisions, the farcical decisions that are being made, the inconsistencies that are happening all the time in VAR decisions. And some, as we know, are using it as an avenue to referee from the VAR room, which is not it's there. It's the name is the actual, it's the video assistant referee. Assistant being the operative word. He assists the on-field referee. He does not referee the game from the VAR room, as John Beaton did clearly last March at Tynecastle. And I know people will be roaring at us, let that one go, but how can you ever let that one go? Because he did referee the game from the VAR room, and he made, I mean, the on-field referees' calls should be final. And that's the thing with VAR in Scotland. The on-field referees' calls are not, they're not final. The VAR will choose to overrule it whenever he wants. And then we had yesterday in Pittodrie where the ball did cross the line, and you had all the Ibrox fans screaming at the end that the VAR... there. Well, who was VAR yesterday for that game? For the game
Mr. of Dallas, VAR.
Mr. Dallas, yeah, I'm sure they'd be, Dallas, so, yeah, they'd be holding, but they'd be the, holding the, for his sacking, all right, wouldn't they?
The assistant flagged for it, so that was the big difference.
Yeah, yeah. And the assistant was right, and you could see in the you could see from the footage it was a much clearer more clear cut decision than the one at Hibs. You couldn't see if the ball was fully out over the line at Easter Road because of the positioning of Alistair Johnston at the time. So that is why Alan Moore didn't have a clear view of it and couldn't make that call. And that call is, you know, it's cost him his VAR gig. But the only one he has to blame for that is himself. And I certainly don't think that Celtic had any involvement in the end result there. I wouldn't hold out any hope that they did anyway. We were all told that they have quiet words behind the scenes and that's the way they operate, but I don't believe that somehow. But yeah, I mean, you want my opinion on VAR. I don't think it matters who we have in the VAR room in Scotland. It's not going to improve. It's not going to get any better. And there isn't a weekend that goes by without a controversial decision happening, without something going wrong. And we even saw it on Saturday with that offside, which was farcical. It's all about kind of utilizing it to your advantage and utilizing it to Celtic's disadvantage when you can and can't. Like, so I don't know. I think the game would be better off without it. I think the game was better off without it. I don't know what James's opinion is on that, but I genuinely think the game in Scotland was a far better game of football without VAR.
I'm going to pass over to James. I can see he's simmering away. But no, VAR is good. VAR should be good. Unfortunately, it's the people that operate it. We've seen it in UEFA matches. There's not much to quibble about. Now and then there's something to quibble about, but factual matters and various other things, when you've got proper operators in charge of VAR, it's night and day. But without further ado, I can see James has got one or two things to get off his chest. Fire away, James. VAR, Alan Tait and SFA. Go for it.
Oh, dearie me. Let's start with Alan Moore and this idea that Alan Moore hasn't been sacked. We can go potato, we can go potato, we can stay this whatever way people want. I was trying to think of the character that Robert Duvall plays in Fallen Down. The cop who doesn't like to be on the street anymore because his wife made him quit. But a better example, right, is to compare Al Powell from Die Hard to Roland Przybylowski from The Wire, right? Both cops who've been on the street, who've drew their gun, and because they drew their gun, they're off the street and are not allowed back, and are never going to go back on the street again. Now, Al Powell did it voluntarily. He walked because he shot a kid, as he tells John McClane in the movie. Roland Przybylowski got sidelined to a useless unit because he shot his own car and then pretended he'd been in a shootout. And that's the difference here. We're not talking about a guy who has made a bad decision and walked away. We're talking about somebody who's been told it's either no job or a job no one would want. And Alan Moore's chosen the job no one would want. I don't care what you call that. That's a demotion, a sacking, whatever. The only thing that counts is that he's no longer on the street with his fucking gun. He shouldn't be officiating games. And as long as he's not officiating games, I don't care what menial task they give him inside Hampden. He can clean the toilets for all I care. As long as he's not officiating games in which we're involved. Get the guy as far away from that as possible. And I jokingly suggested this morning, I wrote an article this morning about about Andrew Dallas yesterday with my tongue firmly planted in my cheek. If the Ibrox Club wants to make a big song and dance about this, we should support them 100% of the way. If there is audio, I want to hear it. If Andrew Dallas screwed up, then he should follow Alan Muir to the basement or whatever it is that Alan Muir's doing. And if they want to take shots at him, we should not get in the way of the bullets. Happy to see Andrew Dallas go as well. Hey, if these people are incompetent, get rid of them all. As far as I'm concerned, they can off as many of these guys as they like. Happy to see it. But in terms of VAR itself, I think we are only now, finally, seeing VAR start to date where it was allegedly brought into day in the first place. And the reason why people like me supported it in the first place. Because it makes it impossible for some of these people to hide. Now, some of them got away with it for a wee while. Nobody's going to get away with it now. Now that every single decision can get scrutinised and every single decision, there's an audio available that tells you how the decision was made. These people have nowhere to hide. It's the reason why the Ibrox penalty count has dropped like a stone this season. We're not going to go through any spell again where they have 30 penalties in a season. That's never going to happen again. Those days are over. And whether it was because Willie Collum just doesn't like them very much or whatever else it is, VAR has made it impossible for these people to get away with that stuff. And as far as I'm concerned, it's now starting to fulfill the function for which it was set up. And I sincerely hope we're going to see more Alan Muirs and more Andrew Dallas is getting sacked. Because it's well overdue. It's well overdue. Muir being sidelined or sacked or whatever you want to call it is an opportunity. For the first time in a long time, the SFA have actually said, if you make a screw up of this magnitude, there are going to be consequences. This should only be the start of the consequences. We've got a chance here to clean out that whole shit pile, and I hope that this is the first of many.
But do you think, James, honestly, that if
James,
they had found a way out of moving him, that they would have?
If they had no hiding place. As long as referees and officials are getting scrutinised properly, and as long as there are going to be consequences for mistakes that they make, there will be less mistakes, including the honest ones.
But that's fair enough. But what I'm saying is if the SFA, if Willie Collum could have found a way out of doing what he did with Alan Muir, don't you think he would have?
No, that's the point. There is no hiding place for these people any longer. They're all going to get caught. Sooner or later, they'll all make a mistake and they will all get caught. And if he set a precedent here, then it's a good precedent to set. And I would like to see more of it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
On a VAR-related subject, we've all looked at Dyson Maeda's disallowed goal on Saturday. Surely there's no place for manual VAR for offside. You've got the instant when the player kicks the ball. So I'm reading various things. There's been pictures and the ball looks bigger, and that's because the ball is in action. The ball's moving. So the point that you take the decision is when the ball is still, just at the very instant it's been kicked. But when you've got that, when you've got the body part of the attacking player and the squiggly lines, there's three areas there that are open to manipulation. Surely it's time that something's done in this. Either they stick with the decision that's made on the field, or they get a proper VAR system in.
These thick lines are absolutely hopeless. We should have walked off all the committees with Dundee United and basically told them, we're not even paying for this until it's fixed, until some better version of it is introduced. I mean, the version that we've got is a joke, and it does allow too much room for interpretation. Muir's only problem was that Muir made it so blatant. His comments are so blatant that you had even mainstream journalists basically saying, this guy's got no defence here, this guy's done. What the hell? Even they couldn't believe it. So, I mean, his only mistake was it was so blatant. Had he been a bit more vague about it and a bit more opaque in the way he put it, he'd probably still be officiating games, but nah. Nope. Couldn't contain his enthusiasm to chop the goal off. That's what happened. But it definitely needs fixing. The VAR system we have is a joke. It's not even funny how bad it is. As you said, I mean, yesterday's squiggly lines were just... Oh, right. Dear God. I mean, it's preposterous that we're... That we have a system that's actually made things worse. But and the ways and the thing that was brought in today, which is to scrutinize officials and the decisions they make, some of them are egregious and nonsensical decisions of years gone by, no longer happen. And their penalty counts have fallen through the floor as a result of it. And they're pissed off because they see us getting penalties and they don't. So as far as I'm concerned, it's starting to work. It's starting to do what it's supposed to do. But our version of it is just abysmal, and there's no defence for how bad it is. No defence. While clubs are paying for it, there's no excuse for it being this subpar. It's ridiculous. And mere clubs should refuse to pay for it.
Eric, what's your take on the squiggly lines? Should the squiggly lines be done away with?
Well, I mean, you know the answer to that question. I mean, you can't really give it an answer. It's plainly obvious the squiggly lines should be done away with. I mean, that decision on Saturday was a joke. But that's the spin-off from having a substandard system. If they had a system like the EPL has that could properly judge whether it's offside or not, then we wouldn't be having this conversation about squiggly lines, but they don't. So, and until such time as we're willing to pay for, if we're willing to only pay for substandard equipment, we're only going to get substandard decisions. And as you said earlier on, Joe, as the system is now, it can be manipulated. Whereas if we actually went and fought out to actually get a good system in, then that can't be manipulated. It will show clearly whether a player is offside or not. At the moment, you cannot clearly judge, that the system that we have cannot clearly judge whether a player is offside or not. And it's simply down to interpretation. And what we're saying is the interpretation of the VAR at the time, who wants to disallow a goal. If he wants to disallow a goal for Celtic, he's going to do it. He's going to draw a squiggly line to make sure that that actually happens. So we always knew the day that it came in, the first day that the VAR came in, that all the rumours were going around that it was a substandard system that they got in, that they hadn't got the full whack or anything that was similar to what the EPL got. But the question I suppose I have to ask is if the clubs are paying for it. The clubs clearly aren't getting value for money, are they? You know, so, and I can understand why Dundee United did what they did and said what they said, and why, like, what I can't understand is why we... And why a lot of other clubs haven't followed suit in doing, you know, and having the same kind of opinion on it as Dundee United had. And speaking up about it and saying, look, if we're paying for this system, then the least we should be getting is a system that actually functions correctly, that does the job it's actually supposed to do. The idea of VAR is to take away interpretation and to give a solid, clear and concise decision as to what actually happened on the field. Whether a ball crossed the line and was out of play, whether a ball is, you know, whether a player is offside, and so on and so forth. But we can clearly see that the current system that we have is not. It doesn't, it's not, to all intents and purposes, fit for purpose. So until such time as they're willing to rectify that, which will we see it? I don't know. And I guess that goes back to what I said earlier on. I think our refereeing system was much better without VAR, because either do it right or don't do it at all. That's the way I see it. So that's my opinion, Joe.
A strange aspect of this is proper VAR has been in use at Celtic Park, Ibrox and Tynecastle this season. So when there's UEFA matches, the proper equipment's in place, and then bizarrely it must be ripped up and stuck away in a box. So that's three out of 12 teams, 25% of the clubs have been using a product. The amount of nonsense that's come out this season, surely it's well worthwhile paying that bit extra. I mean, next season, Aberdeen or Hibs will likely be in a group stage football next season. So there's another grounds win. But Moving on to something that was a bit of a 24-hour wonder around Saturday's game. I'll put this one to you first, James. Brendan Rodgers and his contract. A few folk got very excited from his comments on Friday about freshening up the team, or the manager has to go. So that excitement lasted 24 hours. And then before the match on Saturday, Rodgers was questioning, I'll be here next season. So the manager's 150% here next season. What developments for summer that we've got the 150% commitment that the manager will be seeing through his contract at least?
Your audio cut out at the end there, Joe. What was it you said? Did you get that?
What's your expectations for the transfer window? The manager has given his commitment. He's 150% certain to see out his contract at least.
Well,
James, what's your expectations for Brendan Rodgers and Celtic subs?
It was nice to hear him say it. I thought the evident excitement in the room about the idea that he might quit at the end of the season was actually about as ludicrous as anything I've seen in this very bizarre campaign so far. Because it was perfectly obvious what Brendan was saying on Friday. It was perfectly obvious. And we talked about it on the last podcast, oddly enough. We're talking about this football wisdom that says the third year is the killer. Right, as we discussed, right, the third year is the hardest for a manager on a team, because you played other sides enough that they understand your tactics. They can read it like a book. Your players get jaded. As Roger said, they stop listening to the manager. The magic formulas at once work no longer work. And so, yeah, there has to be turnover, like, all the time. And most managers can't do it. Most managers either lack the personal authority at the clubs they're at today, or they lack the personal conviction to tear up a winning formula and start breaking up a winning team. But the managers who do it become extraordinarily successful and extraordinarily well known for it. Alex Ferguson was a master at doing it in Manchester United. I mean, he rebuilt his team every 3 or 4 years as a matter of routine. And just kept on winning, kept on winning, kept on winning. And if he kept the basic nucleus of his teams the same, they would never have been as successful. I mean, I think there was one transfer window where Kanchelskis left, Paul Ince left, I think one of the centre-backs left, and one of the strikers left. All in the one window. And
Steve
Bruce. I think most Man United fans were gobsmacked when he did that. But the following year, he'd signed Roy Keane. I think Dwight York came in and he brought a bunch of new players and promoted a bunch of the academy guys, and the team never looked better. And went on and won the Champions League on the back of that. And I mean, that's what great managers do. They will break up a winning team and they will make changes because they think that things are getting stale. And it was perfectly obvious, and that's what Rodgers was talking about. But there is a wee group in our media that gets twitchy every time the idea surfaces that Rodgers might be on the brink of leaving. Or, I mean, I'd done a Keith Jackass piece last week about the body language experts, right? And the idea that because Rodgers was wanting me to see doing it, because he spent some time on the phone on the pitch at Perth after the game, that Rodgers was in this really dark place and he'd had enough and was on the way out. It's just absolutely idiotic to believe any of that. For a start, Rodgers made us a promise when he came back. They would be here for the full 3 years unless Dermot Desmond personally toughed him out the door. That was never going to happen. Never going to happen. So I never expected anything other than Rodgers to be here next season. But it's whether Rodgers will be here the season after next that will be decided in the summer. And I think that if we give Rodgers the control that he needs and wants and gives him that opportunity to build that year three team, which will take us into the next cycle, Rodgers will be here for the whole of that one as well. But I mean, this is the question, isn't it? Does he get the backing that he needs? Will he get all the support that he wants? there are some misconceptions. I think that he's going to have to fight very hard against over the summer. And I think fan media is going to have a lot of heavy lifting to do on some of them, because if, for example, we don't go out and spend £8 million, £10 million on a striker, a lot of people are going to freak out and say, oh, Rodgers has been denied the player he wants. But let's see what Rodgers actually says. Rodgers is right. It may be easier to go and find a wide attacking midfielder to replace Maeda on the left than it will be to replace Maeda through the middle. If he's got faith in Ida as a second striker, then he's not going to go out and spend £8, £10 million on a guy who will not get in the team most weeks. So, you know, we're going to have to be a wee bit, like, careful with our expectations for the summer. But there is no question that Rodgers should get plenty of money to spend. There's no question he should get to build the team that he wants. For the first time, he is talking like a guy who expects two or three mainstays of the current team to leave and is perfectly relaxed about that, as long as he replaces them. Don't be surprised if it's Carter Vickers last year. I think most days expect Hitati to go. There may be one or two others, but I mean, there are certain immovable objects. You can't get rid of the captain. You can't get rid of, as far as I'm concerned, Alistair Johnson's the last player we can afford to lose, along with Maeda, right? So there's the three of them, and you can build a whole team around those guys, but I think everybody else is fair game. Everybody else. There are some, obviously, who won't be on the axe list, like Ida, like Engels, like Trusty. They're just in the door. None of them are going to go after one season, but it's fair game. Everybody else is fair game. And Rodgers could dismantle this whole squad. And if he does, I don't have any problem with it, as long as he has got total control of the rebuild. Because that's the only thing that matters. If Rodgers does a rebuild, it'll be good. It'll be a good one. It'll be worth watching. If he does it.
Yep. It's interesting times. I saw a message about the lighting in here. So one of the problems is the timing that we do this. I start off getting good daylight, so I'm going to pass this over to Eric, and I'm going to put some old-fashioned electric lighting on. So, Eric, where do you stand with the way things turned out over the weekend in terms of the excitement at Rodgers mentioning that the manager might leave, and transformed within 24 hours the 150% the manager staying, and it looks as if Rodgers has reinforced his position inside Celtic. Do you expect that to be followed up by early signings, quality signings to bed in and make a real impact next season? I'm going for some light.
You want a straight answer? No, I don't. I feel that... and we've talked about it quite a lot over the last few days, the complacency that's kind of rampant at Celtic Park at the moment, and that is filtering from the top down, is eventually going to affect Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers is the furthest thing from complacent. He's not a complacent man. And the news that he gave about the fact that he's going to be there next season is nothing new, because he had said, you know, unless Dermot Desmond drives him out of the building, he'll be there for the entirety of his contract. As a human being, Brendan Rodgers knew that if he didn't see out his whole 3 years of his contract, he would be absolutely pilloried by the Celtic support. So
yeah, coming back from that.
He signed on for 3 years. He guaranteed 3 years. By saying that he's going to be here next season changes nothing, as far as I'm concerned. What it does, what it does do, is leave the question hanging out there, will he sign on for an extension? Will it be a one-year rolling contract, or will he add another 2-3 years on? We don't know. But the problem is, and as I say, the rampant complacency that's coming from the top down at the moment in Celtic. And we saw the end result of rampant complacency back in 2019. We saw how he handled the de facto director of football, who was constantly interfering in transfer matters. Now, that isn't so much there at the moment, but then we have Silent Mike, who really clearly doesn't seem to be able to handle transfer negotiations very well. So, I mean, I'll put it this way. If we look at what happened to John McKay for supposedly making a few blunders in transfers, and to be fair, the players that he brought in were very good players, Joseph Juranovic, Georgios Giakoumakis. We got decent enough returns on these guys, but apparently one of the reasons, and I know it's only rumoured that he was sacked, was because of cock-ups in the sign-on, you know, in the signings of these players. Now, would you not think that the cock-up in the signing of Adam Ida, which is totally down to Michael Nicholson, would have been a sackable offence, or was far more egregious than what Don McKay did?
Oh, absolutely should have been.
Yeah. Don McKay, as far as I'm concerned, did not mess up transfers. He brought in some quality players who played, you know, who were quality additions to the side and played a big part in the success of Ange Postecoglou's first season. So I know I'm kind of straying a bit off point, but the point I guess I'm trying to make is that Don McKay wanted to get business done quickly, and he wanted to get it over the line quickly. He wanted to have the players in place for Ange Postecoglou at the time for pre-season. So players were brought in pretty quickly over the time of his short tenure. What we've seen with Michael Nicholson and then the Mark Lawwell debacle and then Peter Lawwell coming back into the building is just a return to the old ways of doing things in terms of how we sign players. So my short answer is no, I don't expect things to change. I expect it to be the last 2 weeks of the window if we're lucky. And unless there's a massive change in attitude and in the complacency that's currently very, very visible at the club, Chris Sutton, and we all did articles on it, highlighted that it seemed like the board down tools in January. And it seems to a degree that some of the players took on that attitude as well because of what we've seen since. And again, in any organization, in any business, if you have complacency from the top, it comes down and it seeps down into every facet of the business. And that's inevitable. That's going to happen. So if the guys that were in charge of the business are complacent, then those below them are going to become complacent. And then you have guys who you set aside, like Brendan Rodgers, who's not complacent. But we saw the end result of complacency the last time during his last tenure in 2019. He got sick of the complacency at the club. He got sick of the lack of ambition. He got sick of the interference and transfers. And he decided that he was going to go somewhere else. And a lot of people at that time held it against him. But if you look at the patterns and the things that have emerged since, it's very clear and easy to understand why he'd made that decision. And I don't hold it against him. I hold it against the board. It should never have happened. Because if they had backed him 100%, he would have actually probably gone on to do bigger and better things with the club if he had got the backing that he should have got at that time. But look, hindsight is a fool's version of foresight. There's no point in talking about that now. But the point I'm making is that unless we see a huge change in terms of attitude from the board, and Brendan Rodgers can't drive that change on his own, he has huge ambitions for the club. He, like us, and we talk about it enough, time out of number on our blogs, see the capabilities and the possibilities for this club if it's being run in a much more professional manner than it currently is, as far as I'm concerned. And Brendan Rodgers wants that kind of professionalism. He wants that kind of drive. He wants that kind of attitude at the club, and he isn't getting it at the moment. And I wrote an article on it there last week where I just said, unless these guys resign, unless these guys are gone out of the building, we're not going to see change at Celtic. Because their attitude is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it has been for the better part of this century. It's been the same modus operandi. It hasn't changed. It changed for a bare 6 months in Ange Postecoglou and Ange Postecoglou's first season, and then it just reverted to type. So, will Brendan Rodgers be here after 3 years? Unless we see massive, massive changes over the coming season. I'll tell you one thing, right? If he's not backed in the transfer market before that one-off Champions League qualifier that we have, and he's left short for that, without players that have bedded in or had a pre-season, and he's put in a position where he's going into that being left short, and we lose that game, then you're going to see a deja vu scenario of what happened in 2018. That's going to piss him off no end.
Yeah.
And this is where the board needs to realize the money is there to buy the players, to bring in the quality players. But they have to be smart enough to realize that the money's also there in the Champions League. To invest in the Champions League is only going to bring in more revenue for them. So short-term pain for a long-term gain. Spend and bring in the players that you want, then get the long-term gain out of a good, long, extended run again in the Champions League. And it makes a fortune for the club. It's smart business. Like, but in order for that smart business to happen, they just have to get those players in before that qualifier. I feel that's the benchmark anyway. Getting those players in before the qualifier is the benchmark. That if Brendan Rodgers has the transfers that he wants into the club before we play that qualifier, then I believe there's some change has happened and a change of attitude has happened. And then I believe that, yes, this board is serious about taking this club further. But you're looking at the bones of since 2003, since Peter Lawwell came in, you're looking the better part of the century of the same thing over and over again. So is that going to change next season? Forgive me if I'm a doubting Thomas on that score. You know what I mean? But that's my view on it, Joe.
Well, I mean, it seems to me, right, that if you take into consideration what Brendan is saying, and what he was saying the last time he was here, this is the exact same scenario. We're getting into the third season. And all told, Rodgers' plans for the third season last time was pretty much what he's saying here. A complete rebuild, complete root and branch transformation to the starting 11 and the squad. And Rodgers had a bunch of players that he wanted signed. The board never signed any of them. John McGinn being the most egregious and shocking example. And again, that was gambling with Champions League qualification. The night that it all unraveled was the AEK Athens game at Celtic Park. And the day before it, Rodgers had sat at the press conference and expressed his absolute disgust at the length of time deals were taken and the fact that the McGinn deal looked on the brink of collapsing, and he was about as pissed off as he's ever been. The night of the game, somebody spoke to Chris McLaughlin, a Celtic director, where he trashed the manager and said that it was his unprofessionalism which had jeopardised the tie. I was at Celtic Park the following day. We altered to do a Resolution 12 thing. And Law and Nicholson were there. And I knew within 5 minutes of walking out of that room that either Law had personally briefed Chris McLaughlin or he had signed off on whoever did. Because his attitude that day was, this is all the manager's fault. The managers put us in this position, which was categorically untrue. The people that put us in this position were the people who thought they knew better than the manager about the manager's targets and the manager's ideas. And what astounds me, what continues to astound me, is that these people keep making the same mistakes over and over again. Rodgers comes back, probably thinking he was going to get a free hand, and the first thing he's told, his first day back, is that the summer business will be largely transacted without his input, and he'll have to work with the players that he gets. Now, Rodgers may or may not have trusted that we had a system in place that would deliver the right calibre of players. But he shouldn't have trusted it, and he ceased trusting it the minute he saw what they gave him. Mark Law departs shortly thereafter because Rodgers was never going to put himself through that again, and he probably went to the top man and said, damn it, this isn't working. Can't work like this. Desmond, fine. You don't have to see him again. That's what I assume happened. That's what we all assume happened. And there's good reason to assume that that's what happened. But still, these people don't learn. Rodgers' second season starts. He has ideas about what he wants to do with the team. He wants to progress it quickly. For reasons passing understanding, they don't go out and get done. The very first deal, the Adam Agda deal, which is probably the easiest deal today. It takes an injury to Kyogo before, in a panic, they go and they pay a vastly overinflated fee. Do they learn from that? No. They sell Kyogo in the January window without having a replacement lined up and then go on and finding all these different clubs who they approach are all saying the same thing. We know you've got money. We know you're desperate. And if you want our guy, you're going to have to pay big, 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 big bucks in order to get him. I won't be terribly surprised if some of those same mistakes get repeated this summer, except that we know what the consequence will be this time. Rodgers will not hang around beyond the end of the season. He'll make his decision there and then. He won't telegraph it to anybody, but you'll know that it's been made. Because as you say, Eric, if he's sitting there again in front of a Champions League qualifier, sitting in front of the media, asking where his players are, where the players that we need to guarantee a £50 million jackpot, then it's over. It's done, isn't it? It's finished. Rodgers will see you at the season, and then he'll go. And who we get to replace Rodgers at that point is pretty much up in the air. There isn't another Brendan Rodgers out there.
And it's interesting.
We're all trying to guess, and that's because we don't hear a cheap out of our so-called chief executive. Three and a half years in the job, and all we get is a couple of gags at the AGM. No one knows what Michael Nichols... Well, we do know when Brendan Rodgers returned and his one and only press appearance, Michael Nicholson wants Celtic to be world-class in everything we do, and that's it. Nothing more.
Let's start
and
with again, chief executive.
When the contract...
Let's have a world-class chief executive. That would set a lot of minds at ease.
When the contract issue came up on Friday, Rodgers mentioned speaking to Dermot about it, just as he had a couple of weeks earlier when Dyson Maeda's contract was up. So it's fairly clear that the CEO at Celtic gets bypassed. But that could be a discussion that goes on forever and a day. We do have a football match. We've got a big match on Sunday at Hampden. We've discussed the issues with ticketing, with apps. Who knows how that's going to turn out. But we got a little shock from St Johnston 10 days ago, more than a week ago, last Sunday, let's say, and a fortnight on from that horrible day at McDermott Park, we're facing the same team at Hampden. I don't know if St Johnston have got other priorities or whether they might think that the Scottish Cup might be their route to a bit of glory, but the pitch will be good. We'll have an even bigger Celtic support than we had at McDermott Park. I'm hoping for a 90-minute performance. No slow starts. Get on the front foot. Pin St Johnstone back. Get the crosses flying in. And get the chances created and converted. What's your expectations for Hampden on Sunday, Eric?
Well, look, I suppose the first thing is it's a cup game. So first and foremost, that means that St Johnstone just can't sit back and absorb, even if they score early. They have to, which, do I see them scoring early next Saturday? Is it Sunday or Saturday that the game is on?
Sunday,
yeah. The first semi is on Saturday. But it's a much wider open, expansive a pitch in comparison to McDermott Park. The second thing is the ground isn't going to be rock solid like it was on that day, because the ground was atrocious and the surface was atrocious in that game at McDermott Park. So you're going to have a flat, smooth surface, much wider open expanse to play on. You're going to have a cup tie, which is totally different to a league tie, because they have to come out and play. In that regard, I feel they have to go from it, or they have to go for it, and they have to attack us from the get-go, because they know Celtic's reputation at Hampden Park. They know that Celtic are just going to come out and go at them. So sitting back and trying to absorb what Celtic do and what Celtic, you know, the pressure that Celtic would pour on, is just going to result in a floodgate, the floodgates opening, and Celtic scoring a load of early goals like they did against Kilmarnock on Saturday. That's the way I see it panning out. That St Johnstone just have to give us a game. The big question is, are they capable of giving us a game? And I don't think they are. I don't think they're at a level where they can give us a serious game. They might surprise us. If you remember the League Cup, was it League Cup semi-final a couple of years back? Just before Jekka Marcus and Juranovic left. They absorbed a lot of pressure off us in that game, but eventually they cracked. James Forrest got the opening goal in that game, and they cracked. And I see maybe a similar performance to that, where they try to absorb as much as they can, but I just feel that we'll have too much for them on the day. We'll have, obviously, as you said, a lot more sport behind us, but the Hampden surface and the Hampden pitches, it's a totally different equation to what we saw and what we went through up in McDermott Park. So I would expect a comfortable win, 3-4-0. That would be my view on it. But look, no, it's football. Nobody knows for sure what's going to happen, because we didn't expect to go to St. Johnston and McDermott Park, and we didn't expect to lose that game. We expected that to be a walkover. We expected it to be easier than it was, and it turned out being. I mean, if their goalkeeper has an inspired performance again, who knows? So I do feel, though, that considering it's a cup game, considering they can't sit back and absorb pressure for the whole game, because that will just, they'll crack eventually. And then once the floodgates open, we'll just keep coming. So yeah, I think we'll win it comfortably. I think if we score early, they could be in serious trouble. If they score early, regardless, they might sit back for a while, but we'll pick them off and we'll still score, in which case they'll still have to come out and play. So yeah, 3-4-0. That's my view.
James, Sunday at Hampden, we've got a manager with a 100% Hampden record, unbeaten. There's been a couple of penalty shootouts in the last year that we'd rather do without, but he gets the job done. A manager that's not lost a Scottish Cup tie. What's your expectations for Sunday in the Scottish Cup at Hampden?
First, I'm going to mention briefly that off the pitch, I expect it to be a shit show of biblical proportions, because the SFA started sending out their digital tickets today, and I've already spoke to half dozen people who are royally pissed off with what they got. Some of them didn't even get digital tickets, only emails saying your details are incorrect, so we haven't sent you your ticket. So it's a mess already. It's a mess already. And the people I've spoke to have got tickets for sections of Hampden that they would never set foot in under any circumstances. I mean, they would never buy these tickets if it was an open market sale and pick where you want to sit. So it's already a shit show. It's going to be a disaster. And if this system is there for the final, and a lot of people are just not going to go, and they'll probably determine never to set foot in Hampden again, as they already don't set foot in Ibrox. It's just a disgrace the way the SFA is treated. Ordinary football fans who just want to go and watch their team. To bring in a digital system without consulting anybody first, that a single conversation being had with supporters groups, is just epic SFA at its worst. And Celtic went along with it for reasons that I cannot fathom at all. I heard recently that they were intending to introduce the system for the League Cup semi-final and final, and Celtic drew a line and said absolutely unacceptable, and because the club for the Ibrox also drew a line and said absolutely unacceptable, they scrapped it. But with the Ibrox club knowing the equation this time, they just figured they could get away with anything, and they have. So I blame my club for this as much as SFA. But to return to the game, I expect us to start so well, so aggressively, the way we did against Kilmarnock, that the whole thing will be decided in the first 25 minutes. And then, as far as I'm concerned, the team can take the rest of the day off. Once the job's done, once we've booked the place in the final, they can revert to their form of the last few weeks and take the foot off the gas. But get the job done first. Get the 2 or 3 goals in front, and then take it easy for the rest of the day. I genuinely will not care how the second half pans out, as long as the job's done in the first half. And I think we'll get it done quick. I think they'll want to get it done quick, and they'll get it done quick.
That's fair enough. That's quite succinct. The ticket issue, it's strange. There's not much mainstream mention of it. There's plenty about it in social media.
The mainstream media couldn't give a damn about it.
That's the way it goes. Supporters know where they'll get there. Yeah.
The mainstream media pays as much as the SFA does.
Up some in Spain this week. So that's And something unfortunately, else as well, Bob, I've not checked, well, but I've not seen much from John Paul.
There you go.
I've not tracked him down, but generally, if John Paul Taylor tweets something, it gets well covered and there's reactions to it. I'm not sure if he's done anything since the Glasgow Derby on the 16th of March and the Kettling instance after it, but we'll have to wait and see. Hopefully, tonight's podcast has been enjoyable. I'll try and get my lighting and camera focus sorted out. Hopefully, everyone's enjoyed it. There's been good comments. If you can add comments in afterwards, there's lots of comments last week. I think only 12 appeared on YouTube. So we're at just over 1,000 subscribers. That's a good start, as we might be getting promoted a little bit more. So I'll leave it for now. We'll be back again next week. Hopefully, we'll be reflecting on a Scottish Cup final to look forward to. Hopefully, there'll be no Scottish representatives left in Europe. And hopefully, Barry Ferguson is a few steps closer to getting the job on a permanent basis. And I'm fairly certain that Keith will still be waiting on his takeover. There'll be some other minor problems with it. So there should be plenty for us to discuss next week. I'll thank Eric and I'll thank James for an entertaining hour or so tonight. And look forward to doing it all again next week. And fingers crossed for our brothers in Bilbao.
Yep, Plunge McNugget seems disappointed we'd no takeover chat tonight or fake over chat tonight. But yeah, we'll don't worry, we'll catch up on the fake over next week when there's probably going to be plenty more to talk about.
Definitely.
And we'll also catch up on Mr. Ferguson and his perspective or his prospects at Ibrox and what might happen there. So look, we'll see everybody next week, guys, and you can join us back either Sunday or Monday, depending on the way things go, as usual. But have a good one, and we'll talk again soon.